Despite the attentions of various dentists, her condition had worsened, so much so that, in May, she'd had to give up her job in a corset factory. Without a job, yet with increasing medical bills, Irene soon found her financial position precarious. She'd been sensible when she'd worked as a dial painter, squirreling away her high wages, but her mysterious condition had exhausted her hard-earned savings. With every expensive appointment, she hoped for improvement. As she levered herself into Dr. Barry's chair, she opened her mouth wide and prayed that, this time, he would have good news to offer. Walter Barry, an experienced dentist of 42, examined Irene's mouth with deepening confusion. He and his partner, Dr. James Davidson, had been operating on Irene since the summer. Yet every course of treatment they tried, such as cutting out the diseased bone in her mouth and removing teeth, seemed only to increase her suffering. Their surgery was located at 516 Broad Street, practically opposite the Newark Public Library. Yet it appeared no textbook or medical journal on the shelves of the library or their own practice contained the solution. As Barry examined Irene's butchered mouth at this latest appointment on 8th of November 1922, he could see that, still, there was only more infection, inflaming her empty gums with an unhealthy yellow sheen. James Davidson had experience of treating Fossey jaw, and he and Barry now became convinced this was Irene's trouble. "I immediately started to question Irene as to what her occupation was," Barry recalled. "I made an effort to ascertain whether there was any phosphorus in this material she was using." Unknowingly, he was following in the footsteps of Dr. Niff, who had treated Molly. But the two investigations didn't cross, nor did Kniff have opportunity to share his own discovery, how Molly's jaw was destroyed faster and faster the more of her he removed. The same accelerated decline was now affecting Irene. Barry told his patient it was his opinion she was suffering from some occupational trouble. But as Catherine Sharp later noted, the word radium was never brought into it. Radium was such an established medical boon that it was almost beyond reproach. People didn't question it. And so, although there was some suspicion that the luminous paint was to blame for Irene's condition, culprit number one was phosphorus. In December, Irene took a turn for the worse and was admitted to hospital. She was shockingly pale and found to be anemic. And it was while in hospital that she decided she was not going to lie down and suffer quietly. For although Irene's dentists may have not crossed paths with Kniff, the dial painter's friendships were a stronger network. By now, Irene had heard about Molly Maggia's death. The gossip mongers were saying syphilis had killed her. But the girls who knew her found that hard to believe. And so, while in hospital, Irene told her doctor that there had been another girl who'd had symptoms just like hers, who died only a few months before. The Maggia family were trying to move on with their lives without their sister. That winter, Quinta was pregnant again, and Albina was hoping that any month now she would have the same good news to announce. But for Irene, sitting weakly in her hospital room, Molly's death was definitely not something in the past, but somehow horribly present. And then she told the doctor something else. Another girl, she said, was sick. She could have meant Helen Quinlan, who had been taken ill with a severe sore throat and swollen face, which had inflamed her pixie features. She, too, had had trouble with a tooth and was beginning to show signs of anemia. But Helen appears not to have moved in the same social circles as Irene. It was Hazel Vincent to whom she referred.